but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Our next guest is one of the all-time greats in the state of Oregon, high school football coach. In 1992, he agreed to coach at Lake Oswego High School. I think he just thought it was going to be a one-year thing. And they sucked him right in. I don't know what they had on him. He is a former first-team All-Pac-10 wide receiver. His father, a professional football coach who brought the family here to the Portland metropolitan area. Why? Because, well, you may remember, was it the Portland Storm? The Breakers? Can't quite remember the whole story off the top of my head. But I'm sure that Steve Corey will remember it. He's joining us now, Lake Oswego High School. They're playing in the semifinals on Friday night. Big game. What's the story with Dad? How did your father bring the family here? Was it the Storm or the Breakers? I can't remember the whole story.
You know, it's great to be on your show, first off. I listen to this thing, and I'm a big fan of yours, so it's an honor.
Thanks, Steve.
We came here as a family in the World Football League days, if you remember that. Yes. That was the first stint here, and it lasted a year. In fact, the team was over in Hawaii, John, and they didn't have enough money to get back to Portland. And the thing dissolved, and then, you know, we went down to San Diego with Pro Throw for a year, and then he went with Vermeil to Philadelphia. And then the next stint here was the USFL, and we were the nomad team. We went from Boston the first year to New Orleans the second year to Portland the third year, and then it disbanded, and he left the Portland area at that time.
Did you, when you were here and a kid and looking around, obviously you play your high school ball and your college ball at Oregon State, but did you ever think, you know what, I'm going to be that coach that coaches and wins, you know, 300-plus games and helps a lot of kids? Was that on your mind at that time?
You know, it wasn't the way that it worked out. You know, I got into coaching. In fact, in the USFL days, I worked with my dad. He hired me, so I was started out kind of at the pro level, which is really odd. In fact, one of the receivers was Charlie Smith, and Charlie had played for my dad with the Philadelphia Eagles, so it was kind of a funny deal. But then I went to the University of Pittsburgh, and then I had two of my three kids born, and the lifestyle just was the thing. You know, I wanted to be around my kids. You know, my dad missed a lot. I don't hold anything against him. We had a great life and all those kind of things. But so I came back here, and then this thing just really fell on my lap. You had mentioned in the intro, and thanks again for the intro, but you had mentioned that I told them I would do it for a year, and that's exactly how it worked out. They were kind of in a bind. The guy quit on them, and it was the middle of summer, and they had nobody. And I talked to the AD a couple of times, and he finally talked me into it. You know, I got the okay from my wife, Nancy, and here we go. We're going to do it for a year, and this is year 34 for me, and it's been just an unbelievable blessing. It really has. So, you know, it's just has worked out so awesome. I've seen my kids. I've grown up with them. Now they're older. Now I got grandkids running around the game, man. It's just taken full circle.
I think it's awesome that, you know, you've made a life and a career here. You have seen the game change a lot. How has the high school game changed, maybe, you know, if you go back to 92 to now? How are kids the different, the same, the competition, the parents? What's been the biggest changes?
You know, I think that first off, you know, in my opinion, kids are kids, you know what I mean? And then that's their environment, and things change, and, you know, maybe how they're brought up and so forth and so on. So I love the kids. That's why I continue to do it. So I don't really see a lot of change there. The real change, though, in recent history is the new world we're in, you know, with the social media, and it's all about ticks and you know, getting highlights and, you know, what star you are, 3 or 5 or all those kind of things. They've played a much bigger role. That's one thing. The trainers now that, you know, kids are hiring trainers to train them, you know, they're hiring these services to get their name out there and put it, you know, in front of coaches. There's all the camps. So the exposure now that they can get, and really, I look at it, a lot of it, and I think it's just a big money maker for people, but they now have influenced the kids that way. And then what's happened beyond that are the parents. So now you start taking your kid to these camps, or this guy's training them, and you got all this stuff going, and they're telling them how great they're going to be, and man, this guy's got this and that. In the meantime, you're paying them $1,500 a month, and you know, I'd tell you a lot of things with that. But I think that's really influenced the kids a bunch on a little bit of individualism, you know, and probably more than just a little bit. All about me, and now you're seeing the transfer portal in high school, and that's changing the things that are going on. You know, really, to be honest, I think the football here in Oregon in the last years has been just mediocre in a lot of ways, and I think some of that is because of this, the kids transferring, and if you're trying to build a program, it's really hard nowadays because kids are leaving, you know, and going somewhere else because you're not winning right now, but you're taking some of your best players and they're leaving, going somewhere else. How are you going to build a program? So we've got a real, you know, a real top end, you know, 4, 5, 6, whatever that number is. Then there's some few in the middle, and then there's some that just are really struggling. And so I think it's sort of a shame the way things have worked, and hopefully it'll straighten itself out in some way or another.
Lake Oswego High School football coach Steve Corey is our guest. You're in the semifinals. You've got Nelson High School coming up on Friday night. Central Catholic and Westland on the other side of the bracket. Before I get to the matchups, and let's talk about, you know, OSAA and all that, but you mentioned the transfer stuff. Are kids just transferring to transfer, or are they transferring because they're getting deals places? What is the whisper in the scuttlebutt?
You know, I don't think it's happening here as much as it is, you know, the Texas with the deals and the money, and, you know, who knows what's going on in the, you know, the biggest program here is Oregon, obviously. So, you know, and their NIL stuff, and not only them, it's all across the country. But I just don't think, you know, football in Oregon is not nationally, you know, the highlighted place. Now, you go to California, you go to Texas, you go down to Florida, those places, it's happening. They're paying kids. In fact, there was a kid that was here a few years back, a tight end from Central Catholic that ended up at IMG, which is in Florida, and they pay him, you know, $300,000 to go there for half a year, and then he goes to the University of Miami. So it's definitely happening, and it's happening in a bigger way all the time. And there's even talk of, you know, kids moving into areas with their parents, and you know, it's gotten crazy that way. But it's definitely become part of the landscape, really, in high school football. And again, not as much here in Oregon, because we just are not the national attention place that have, you know, 500 Division I type kids.
You've got, you know, this game coming up. What are the rules as far as how many kids you can suit up? Who can be on the sideline? You know, I know all these teams have got kids who have worked hard all year that maybe won't participate in the game. What do they allow you to do?
Well, I tell you, this is the craziest thing, and I've fought this for 34 years that I've been doing this. What they do is they limit the number of kids you can dress and have on the sideline. So the number is 60. Now, how they come up with that number and why they do, there is no reasoning. So what it means to a program, and any program now, and programs are different. You know, the way we run the program here, I suit up the JV kids. So everybody in the program from sophomore to seniors, they suit up for every game. We bring them to every game. They're every practice. We practice together. So there, some of those guys are holding bags, and some of them are getting water for something. I mean, they're just doing their role, right? And so that's from August until now. And now you get in the playoffs, and now I have to tell 40 of my kids that are on our roster at the very start, been at every single game, every practice, all that, I got to tell them that they have to go up in the stands and watch the game now that it's the playoffs. And on top of that, I've got to buy them. I don't have to do it, but they've got to buy a ticket. So I buy the 40 kids tickets so they can get into the game. Jeez. And then here's the other part of that. So let's say we win like we have the first two games. Well, then Monday they come back and they're holding bags and they're practicing. They're with us. They're doing everything that they've done all year long. Game comes again Friday. Got to buy a ticket. They got to go up in the stands, and it's the craziest thing. You know, I don't see how they can justify, because everybody talks about the kids and it should be for the kids, and that's what this is all about. And to have that kind of rule just doesn't make sense. Maybe you have some insight on it. How does that make some sense?
It doesn't. But is this an OSAA rule? Are they getting it from another state? My impressions of the OSAA are that, you know, they tend to follow other people's guidance, and that they're not really, you know, they're more operate from a position of being reactive instead of proactive. What do you hear?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, and I'm not sure, but I would guess, if I was guessing, I'd guess like you're guessing. Someone does it in Washington, or they do it down wherever, and I talked to them at numerous times, especially early in the fight, you know, and they just don't come up with anything. I mean, again, there's just no reason. They talk about a cost, and, you know, I'm at Lake Oswego. Well, you know, that just doesn't equate with me. You know, you're going to punish the kids because they live here in Lake Oswego, number one. Number two, you don't think, and I've said this to them, you don't think the parents would drive them to the game if it's that big of a deal from an expense standpoint? We need another bus. Okay, we need another bus to go to the game. So everything they come up with that I've heard from them, it just doesn't make sense. One time they told me that, well, coach, you can have, you know, 60 kids on your sideline, and the guys across the way can only have 20 because that's all they have. And my statement was, if they're looking at my sideline, they're getting their butts beat in the field. But that just doesn't, none of it makes sense to me. And it gets me going, because it's just not right for the kids.
Steve Corey with us. Sorry, I mistake you for your father.
No,
you're not
going to
be mad at that. Yeah, Steve Corey with us. Your dad's influence, since I brought him up, you know, the son of a coach, we see those kids turn into players in high school and college, often become coaches themselves. What is it about that household and the culture in the household that you think draws you to do what dad did?
You know, so much of the game, really, in the sport, the team sport of football, is so much like life. You know, my dad was such a fine person, and was so loving to everybody. His family was the most important thing in his life, and I've really taken so many traits from him for just how to live. You know, but that's the way he coached too. You know, which I was able to see that as a kid. I could see how close-knit the players were, and, you know, you win and lose, the adversity you go through, you know, on and on, all the lessons you learn. And I learned that growing up, and it was so fun to be a part of it. You know, I mean, as a young kid, I'm on the USC sideline watching O.J. Simpson run, you know, and so you look back on some of the things that I saw, and some of the things that football brings to life, man, and it was just like, I love the game. I love what it's about. I raised my family just like I coach my kids here, and really, that's the way my dad was.
I think it's great, and you probably recognize kids on your own roster who you think, hey, that kid could be a coach one day. You've got a semifinal game. You're looking over at the other side of the bracket. You know, there's some good teams sitting on the other side of the bracket as well. Central Catholic, Westland. You'll play Nelson. Lake Oswego Nelson is one semifinal. What do you see when you scout Nelson? And keep in mind, they may be listening.
Yeah, you know, I know Aaron Hazel, who's the head coach over there. The school is fairly new. He does a great job. They've got good kids. They've got a lot of skilled kids. They're big, upfront kind of kids. So they're a very good football team. They really are. They're one of the ones, I think, going into the year that – I don't think anybody really knew exactly about them. You know what I mean? That they've got a really good looking team, and they kind of came out of nowhere. They got kind of, once they beat Central Catholic and won that league for the first time, I think people started to, you know, wow, who is this group? So I've seen them on film, and again, they're really good. It's going to be a good game. I told our players the other day, you know, you get to the semifinals and everybody's good. So there's four really good teams, and I think it's going to be very competitive and fun to watch, and hopefully things will work out for the Lakers. But, you know, whoever wins is going to be a good team winning, and same in the other bracket.
When you prepare a team at this juncture, I mean, the install is probably there. You know, in Oregon, Dan Lanning's talking about, you know, they're still heavily contact at practices. Do you find yourself tapering down this time of year, or how do you handle that from sort of a load maintenance perspective?
That's a great question too for coaches at this time of year. You know, and I'm a non-contact guy. You know, there's different philosophies, like Coach Lanning in his group. You know, there's more contact, and there's other people that do that. And that's a great way to do it for sure. I don't do that. You know, we're in shorts, or if it's cold, sweats and shoulder pads and helmets all year. We don't do anything live. You know, we do FUD stuff and everything else. So this time of year, we really cut back time. We cut back the collisions we're having. It's more about getting lined up right, you know, and knowing what we're trying to defend and what the game plan is, and watching film and things like that, than it is being out on the field. In fact, yesterday we were out on the field, or Monday we were out on the field just in helmets. So we took a day. Monday was just a learning day, and then yesterday was a light day with helmets and shoulder pads, and today will be the same thing. So we really, I just believe, when I get to this point, our kids fundamentally aren't going to learn anymore. You know, we don't need to do individual drills and run them through cones and things like that. So we just need to get ready to prepare for who we're going to play and be as fresh as we can when we get to the point of playing Friday.
All right. Yeah, you have the game on Friday. You're in the semifinals. I have reached out to the OSAA to try to get some clarification on the rule to see if we can get those kids on the sideline, Coach. But I love that you're coming on. I got to ask you what you make of what's going on at Oregon State, and you played in the Pac-10. What you make of that conference? You know, you had to break your heart a little bit.
It really did, man. It really hurt. It hurt a lot of us, I think. You know, even maybe some that are out there, you know, beyond the Oregon State, you know, people in the Pac-12, as I look at it now, too. But yeah, it was such a blow, you know, when those teams left. I think if they would have stayed together and we could have, you know, kept things together, the league would have, you know, spoken for itself like it had for years and years. I think the situation they're in, to be really honest, I get the feeling I don't know how we keep up. You know, I mean, we're not in that same economic world that some of these schools are. I think what's going to happen is we're going to end up with 25 or 30 teams that can afford to be those teams, and then there's going to be feeder schools. You know, what happens now is, you know, you get good players. Again, it's sort of what I was talking about in high school. Yeah, how do you build a program? You know, you get some good kids, and all of a sudden they become, you know, 1,000-yard rushers, and they're looking for the next deal. And you can't blame the kids, you can't blame the colleges, but they need to get some regulations. But Oregon State's kind of left a little bit in the cold. I like, you know, what the group they have now, but, you know, again, looking at it very honestly, I think it's a rough road to get back where you really want to be. I don't know if that road's even available anymore.
There are a lot of parents listening who have kids who might be in middle school, might be a 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade football player. What advice do you give to those kids as, you know, as they aim for high school? Should they be playing multiple sports? Should they be taking downtime in the off season? You know, 7-on-7, you know, is that something you recommend? Weight training? What do you tell parents who maybe have a 7th or 8th grader that they're on the cusp of, you know, being a high school football player?
I think, you know, we've gotten so out of hand with specializing in sports. You know, I think kids, even in high school, they need to play multiple sports. And I got to tell you, the first question I get when college coaches come around in recruiting is, what else does he do? You know, they really, they want multi-sport athletes. So at a young age too, you know, before you ever get in high school, they should be doing everything, you know, and getting into the weight room. I think there's a time and a place for that. Maybe by the time you get into eighth grade, you can start kind of lifting weights, and some of that can get a little crazy. So you got to make sure you realize who you're working with. I think the kids got to have fun. They got to enjoy it. It's still a game. And I tell our families and our kids every year the same kind of speech. 3% of the kids are going to go on in every sport in high school. 3% are going to get a scholarship and go on and play. So, you know, the percentages are low, so just let your kid have fun. The other stuff will take care of itself. It really will. And if they're the kind that can go on and play, the good Lord's blessed them with some sort of talent, height, weight, speed, you know, whatever. And you can keep perfecting it as time goes on, but you don't have to do it as 7th, 8th, 9th grade kids.
Steve Corey, Lake Oswego High School coach. He's got a semifinal game against our good friend Aaron Hazel of Nelson High School. So we got friend of the show playing friend of the show, coach. So go have fun with it. And we'll see if the OSAA gets back to me. I did reach out to the head of the OSAA during the interview, and I asked, hey, what's the deal with this rule? Doesn't make any sense. These kids should not be required to buy a ticket to the game. They're part of the team. It's ridiculous.
Right. Well, I really appreciate you bringing light to it, because I think it's really ridiculous. And the only reason I would even bring it up, talk about it, fight for it, is the kids. That's the only reason. And if they can convince me why it's good for the kids, then, you know, that's a whole other story.
Steve Corey said he was going to coach for one season. Look at him now. Here he is. All right. I appreciate you, man. We'll get you back on. Good luck to you.
Hey, thanks very much. Great talking to you.
All right. There he goes, former Oregon State wide receiver. Coach at Lake Oswego High School, the Final Four in the 6A bracket. It is obviously Nelson and Lake Oswego playing in one semifinal out at Hillsborough Stadium, 7 o'clock Friday night. And Central Catholic and West Lynn matching up at Sherwood High School on Friday night. I think we are headed to a West Lynn, Lake Oswego-Nelson final. I don't know. We'll see. Can Central Catholic throw a little wrinkle into it? You got the BFT. Punch It Audio's next.